So, I don't, Abbot Chiffon doesn't need an introduction. I'll tell you this. The reason he's here is that he was coming through some months ago, and I wasn't here, and he told the sisters, why doesn't Mother Melania ever ask me to give a talk? So I was like, if I had thought I could get you, I would have asked. So I asked.
Likely he, story.
It sounded good, though, didn't it? No, anyway, it's very, very wonderful to have you, Father, and we're all looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well,
thank
you. It's a joy to be here. I was so excited about being here today that I went to bed at 9 o'clock last night. I'm staying with the Capuchin Franciscans in Berkeley. I have more fun with the Capuchins than I do with our own clergy. So I was staying there, and I went to bed early last night with the intent that I was going to get up at 5:15 and be on the road at 6 to make sure I was here on time. And but my desire to be here with all of you took place around 2:15. And I tried to sleep, but I couldn't. And I got up and did a little work on my laptop, and then I went back to bed and still didn't work. So finally, I got up at 3:30 and left at 4. And drove in the dark smelling the smoke.
Oh.
So, you know, with all the smoke that you've had here.
Yeah.
I want you to know that we were really praying for this town and for this monastery during the fires. And, you know, Calistoga is one of my favorite places. Father Paul and I, when we started our journey to get out of Richmond.
That explains it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The final straw in Richmond was one night I woke up and I heard the sound of a helicopter, but it wasn't going away. And I went out and I looked up, and there was a police helicopter hovering over our monastery with two giant spotlights, one on the front door and one on the back door of the neighbors. And then there were all these undercover police cars surrounding the house. It was a drug bust. And that, coupled with the fact that we live so close to the refineries, that the sky was orange at night, and I did some very Protestant sort of thing. I got down on my knees by my bed, and I said, please get us out of here. Please let us go anywhere but here. And so a short time after that, we got a blessing from our bishop to start looking for a rural location. And so we were on the road for 6 months. And we had an old Ford pickup with a homemade camper on the back. Father Paul was a gardener. That's how we made part of our living, as he did gardening for people that lived up in the Oakland and Berkeley Hills, and I taught at St. Mary's College High School. And but we finally found a way out. And so for those of you who follow my blog, I've been the last three times now, I'm reviving my a series of articles that I wrote in 2012 on the foundation of the monastery. And so, you know, this is going to be taking place. Once I get to the where I ended off, I'm going to continue until I have something, because I have a publisher that wants to publish the history of our monastery. So I'm going to try to do that. So one of the things that you will, if those of you who already know me, well, know that I am not someone who comes prepared. So that can actually have tragic consequences. I used to teach college psychology many, many years ago. I'm a recovering psychologist. And worse than that, I'm recovering from Berkeley. Which is where I went to school. And so one of the things that I, when I was teaching, that I would do, and I had these two young men sit here intentionally. One of them is that at my age, I need some young energy around me. But what I used to do with my students when they would come in for the first day of class, and all the students that sat in the very back, I would move them to the front for the rest of the year. And then word got out. And so the students that sat in the front, I could tell, they don't want to be in the front. They wanted to be in the back. But I left them in the back. And I did this alternately over the years, so they never knew. So they basically, then I had started having students that would sit in the middle. But in the first session or two of the classes, I would look and I would see whether they were sort of dozing. One time there was a young fellow that fell asleep in one of my classes. And so I'm way up here. And I've noticed that he is, you're going to regret sitting there. So I noticed that this guy's head had gone down. And I could tell by the breathing that he was sleeping. So as I continued my walk and I talked a little softer and a little softer so he wouldn't know that I was standing right next to him. And then I just stood there and I looked at him. And everybody else looked at him. And then everybody started laughing. And he woke up to see what everybody was laughing about. And everyone, myself included, we were all staring at him. And he was the most alert person in my class for the rest of that year. So, one of the things, and I'm going to be up and down, one of the things that that makes me probably different than your stereotype of a monk. Well, first of all, if you really know monks, you will know that the stereotype of a monk is simply not true. Saint Paisius Marathos was a good example. You know, he was a clairvoyant, and it's said that he would levitate. During prayer, he would he could tell your sins before, or even ask. I have a friend, a monk in Canada, who was in St. Tikhon's monastery, and he had to leave because he didn't have a green card, and so the United States government told him he was going to have to go back to Canada. And he had no place to go, and he didn't know what to do. So he went to Marathos, and he went to see the elder Paisius. And his intent was to ask the elder, where should I be? And he didn't speak English or Greek, and so he tried to find someone that spoke Greek and English that could go with him, but he couldn't find anyone. And finally one day, just as he was about to leave, he was sitting in one of the little cafes in Carriez, the little town, the little capital of Marathos, and he heard, and there was a man sitting at another table who said, oh, you should go with Father Raphael. He wants to see the elder Paisius, but he doesn't speak Greek. And so this other man went with him. And they got to the elder's gate of his hermitage, and there was a sign that said, please do not interfere with my solitude. So they didn't feel like they could do anything. They couldn't call out or anything. And so they're sitting there looking at the door to his little monastic cell, wishing that they could call him out. And between the monastic cell and themselves, which there was a fence there, was a gate, or was a little sort of constructed table, rustic, and some stools And all of a sudden, he's sitting there. Mm-hmm. He didn't come out. He just appears there. Mm-hmm. And just as they notice that he's sitting there, and he goes like this, and the gate unlocks itself and opens. And so they're sitting there, and he gets them some water and some figs. Most of the Greek monasteries will give you ouzo and Turkish delight, but he gave them. But he gave them. I don't like ouzo, so I go to the Russian monastery. And so here he is. He gives them some figs to eat and some water. And then Father Raphael is sitting there thinking, here we are, and we still can't. I can't tell him what I want. I've come for. And all of a sudden, the elder Paisius, in clear English, spoke to him and answered all of his questions that hadn't been asked. So he had the gift of, you know, like in the New Testament of the gift of tongues, the real gift of tongues. And then I also, years ago, I met a German who had the same experience. And speaking of Germans, when I was on Mount Athos, I just got sick and tired of German tourists. They weren't Orthodox. Why are they here? Who let them in? I was at the Great Lavra, and we were in this little chapel in the Catholicon, the main monastery church. It was built by Athanasius the Great. And I'm in this little chapel where the reliquary of St. Athanasius is, that founded the monastery in 900 and something. And so they opened up a door into a little room that was like a miniature library, but it was all glass partitions where the shelves were, and that was the reliquary room. So this was like a room from floor to ceiling of relics. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, so I'm taking my prayer rope and I'm touching all the relics. But there are some Germans there, these tourists. And so, you know, here's the reliquary, and they're standing like this. And they're talking like this. And they're in my way. And so I complained to one of my friends that I was with, a priest. I said, why don't these German tourists stay away? It would be so much better to be able to experience Mount Athos without these tourists. And then I wanted to see the charnel house of the Great Lavra, and I didn't know where it was, and I didn't know whether it would be polite to ask the question. So I prayed to God to help me find the charnel house. So I went out the great wall, went out through the main entrance to the walled city, which is what the Great Lavra is. And I went around the corner, and I was walking, and all of a sudden I felt drawn to this stone staircase. And there was a door open to a little building, and I went in, and here was the charnel house with the bones of, I think it was something like 5,000 monks in there, and skulls piled along the sides. And I think there's 36 patriarchs and so many bishops there. And I picked up one of the skulls, which, you know, monks are supposed to do to contemplate their own death. I'm holding that. Well, then when I went back into the Great Lavra, there was a somebody was there, another visitor, and he said, oh, they're about to do a service, a malevolent to the Holy Virgin in this miraculous icon that they have. And so I went into this little Byzantine church that was just inside the gates. And as I walked in, there was this, the iconostasis off to the far end, and off to the left of the iconostasis, freestanding, was an icon that was probably from the end of this table here to here in width. And all the monks that were going in there were prostrating before it and kissing it, and then stepping back and prostrating one more time.